Good Saturday afternoon. My name is Roger Metz, and you are listening to Woods and Water, South Carolina on 94.5 WGTK. You know, you can always listen to this show on your FM dial, the free Conservative Talk 94.5 app, or listen live, streaming feed at the conservativetalk94.5.com website. Just look on the right side of the webpage and click the Listen Live link. Today's show is going to be different because I'm not in the studio. Instead, probably right about now, I'm looking at a couple of Boston butts that have been on the grill since 7 o'clock this morning. You know, we had Mike Horn from the South Carolina Barbecue Association on the show a few weeks ago, and I learned that, at least according to him, I was doing some things wrong. So this time around, I'm going to brine them overnight instead of covering them in mustard. I'm also going to leave them on the grill, maybe just raise the temperature instead of wrapping them in tinfoil like I used to do. You know, I always had a problem with getting a little burned on the bottom of my butts when I wrapped them in tinfoil and put them on direct heat. And one of the things he said was, if you remember, if you're looking, it ain't cooking. So I hope maybe by end of the show, maybe just a little bit after, that I'll have a new way to do my barbecue Boston butts. And that's all thanks to Mike Horn, the South Carolina Barbecue Association. Anyway, today is kind of a best of show. It hasn't been on the, we haven't been on the air that long, but we do have some pretty good shows. So we picked a couple of segments from past shows and hope you'll enjoy listening to them again. One of the segments you're going to hear is about the Poinsett Electronic Combat Weapons Range down in Sumter, South Carolina. In that segment, I've got my daughter Taylor with me, and we had been down to the beach, stopped on our way back, and spent 2 hours watching F-16s come in and do strafing runs on the target range. Watched them do mock bombing runs and really had an informative time with the air traffic controllers up in the tower. It's one of those things, if not many people know it's down there, it's free, it's open to the public. The only thing is you need to call and check with them to make sure there is something on the schedule if you're going to be in that part of the state. This next segment is going to be a recap of the Al Stokes segment from Waddell Mariculture Center down in Beaufort, South Carolina. Waddell is where they raise all the cobia released in the state. They raise a lot of redfish, trout, and striped bass that go back into the saltwater environment, not the freshwater lakes of South Carolina. Al is a great guy. If you're going to be down at Hilton Head this summer, give the Waddell Center a call. If they have time, they'll be more than happy to take you on a tour of the facility. There's also a couple of walking trails there close by. Just a good place to do some educational things while you're on vacation with the family. The last segment is going to be with Bradley from the South Carolina Department of Revenue, South Carolina Department of Resources, and he's going to be going over the boating safety. And I know this weekend many people are going to be out in the water. I hope you're going to be careful out there. This segment's just a good reminder for all of us as we're out there. A few things to watch out for, a few things that they're looking for that are common violations. And just remember, whether it's out on the water or on the ramp, put the other guy first. Never hurts. Ramp etiquette, boating etiquette go hand in hand. So yesterday was the 4th. Now, whether it was right here in Greenville, down at the beach, or somewhere in between, did you see some good fireworks? There were a lot of fireworks displays on the calendar event from last week. I hope you get out and watch some of those. I know I was sitting out in my backyard on the 28th. That was last Friday night, and I could hear, or last Saturday night, and I could hear the fireworks from the Greer display, and it really sounded good. Did anybody make it down to salute from the shore? If you made it down to that one, I'd love for you to send me an email, send me some pictures, you know, call into the show next week and tell me what it was like out there on the beach. More importantly than the fireworks, though, I hope everyone is having a safe holiday weekend. And whether it's on the water, up in the mountains, or right out in the backyard, remember the reason for the holiday, the flag, the symbol of our country. And as I did on last week's show, the little 5-minute segment on what the 4th of July is really about. One last thing before we get to the calendar of events. Congratulations to the anglers at the University of South Carolina. Patrick Walters and Geddes Brannon went over to Pickwick Lake in Alabama in the wild card tournament. They finished 18th overall. They weighed in 5 fish a day, and they ended up with about 30 pounds, and they qualified for the championship Bassmaster Carhartt Championship tournament. That is a first for this fishing club. Congratulations to them. That tournament if you're interested in it, is going to be held over on Lake Chattoog in Georgia. That lake is kind of hard to find, but it's right up on the Georgia-Tennessee line. It's going to be from July 31st to August the 2nd. Now, if you've been listening to this show, you've heard from Geddes before. Young man who's got a lot going on. Really interesting kid to talk to. I'm going to try to get him back on the air before the tournament. If not, we'll have him on after the tournament and let you hear just a little bit more about what it's like to fish in the College Bassmasters Classic Series. The calendar events for this week. If you like blues and barbecue, then Greenwood, South Carolina is where you need to be July the 10th through the 12th. This is going to be something to see. Starting out Friday at noon, they've got all sorts of blues bands playing. They call it the Blues Cruise, Arts and Crafts Fair, amusement rides for the kids, all the way to midnight. Then Saturday morning starting 10 o'clock, they're going to have amusement rides, arts and crafts, more blues cruise, and from 11 to 4, the Barbecue Taster's Choice event. After that, hot dog eating contest, and all the way to midnight again, more blues. So if you like barbecue and blues, this is somewhere that you need to be July the 10th through the 12th. Last week, we had Carrie from the Glendale Outdoor Leadership School on the show with us. And I wanted to remind you that on July the 12th, they're going to have another in their series of wilderness survivals. And this is the Friction Fire and Water Purification Seminar. You know, fire is an essential element of wilderness survival. A fire can lift your spirits, keep you warm, and cook your food. The water purification side of it will keep you alive. If you don't have fire, you can have that water. Anyway, this is a good thing for all of us that are going to be outside camping, hiking, that sort of thing to take part of. Remember, July the 12th, 2014, contact the Glendale Outdoor Leadership School for more details. And don't forget, coming up in September, they got the Wilderness Survival Weekend. That will be one you don't want to miss too. Coming up, historic Brightonsville, July the 12th, 2014, is the annual reenactment of the Battle of Huck's Defeat. 2 days, entertaining events, very family friendly. They're going to have a ribbon cutting ceremony for the new battlefield site, activities with 18th century music and dancing, cavalry weapons demonstrations, kids militia drill, and a wreath laying ceremony. In addition to all that, they're actually going to have an 18th century worship service on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock in the Oak Grove. It says food and refreshments will be available, but picnic baskets are encouraged. Hope you'll make it out to that. For you kayakers and paddlers, Plantation Paddle Days down at Hampton Plantation State Historic Site, July the 12th, 9 to 2. In plantation times, the Lowcountry waterways served as a network for transportation for settlers and slaves. The rice culture was heavily invested in the rivers and streams, so a guided tour of the Santee River and Wamba Creek is the way to explore this culture. Go on the State Park website, check out the Hampton Plantation State Historic Site and the Plantation Paddle. Next paddling event is down on the Edisto River. You know, the Edisto changes from season to season, often week to week, depending on the rainfall. This program is open to paddling of all skill levels. The American Canoe Association is going to have certified guides there. This is on July the 19th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is one of those things, the Edisto, that black water and swampy environment is something I've always wanted to go do. And if this wasn't on a Saturday, I would probably be down there doing it with you. Last in our calendar for today is the first annual Palmetto Sport Fishers Redfish Charity Open Tournament. Entry fees $100 per boat. Payouts being 70-30 for two places. They're basing a payout of $1,600 on 20 paid boats. This is to benefit the Ronald McDonald House there in Charleston. The club will receive 20% up front. They're going to donate 20% of their year in balance to the Ronald McDonald House. If you've ever had any dealings with them, you know what a great charity that is. Tune in for the Best Of Show, and I'll see you later. And welcome back to Woods and Water SC on 94.5 WGTK. Remember, you can listen in on your FM dial or the summer while you're on vacation. You can get the free app or you can go online to tunein.com and pick up the station there. Like I said before, I'm a runway junkie from years and years ago. I guess Dad having an airplane, and when we were growing up, one of the squadrons at Shaw Air Force Base down in Sumter was a reconnaissance squadron, and growing up, I can remember those jets coming across the farm, and you know, they were, even back then, they were kind of gone before you heard them type thing, and it's just in my blood, just like saltwater fishing is. And that only got worse as I got into high school, and you had Shaw Fest going on every year. Now it's every other year, and some years it's postponed because of deployments and that sort of thing. And and right after high school, I had a buddy who went in the Air Force, and he was stationed at Shaw. So I spent a lot of time down at Shaw Air Force Base, and I discovered Poinsett Electronic Combat Range. And if you saw the picture, F-16 coming through, smoke coming off the gun port, and it's just one of those things that if you've never done, you need to go do it. This is off topic for Woods and Water SC, but this is something that's just really cool. And I got to share this with my family, and I wanted you, I mean, you can't help when you see a jet fighter coming through. You can't help but the blood starts and, you know, you start tingling and the noise and all. It's just great. So anyway, on our way from Lansford Canal down to the beach, we stopped in. Of course, we dropped down from Lancaster to Camden, got off on 261 there at Boykin and on into eastern part of Sumter, which is where Shaw is. And I had to convince the family to let me take a 2-mile detour so I could sit off the end of the runway for a few minutes. We sat there for, and you can't park right off the runway anymore. There's lots of signs up, but you can go right out there before you get to the Kentucky Fried Chicken and you can pull off the side of the road. And I had my binoculars out looking, seeing if I could see any planes moving. Of course, there was nothing going on. I was really disappointed. And as I was panning back across the runway, out of nowhere, there's an F-16 that's just smoking down the runway. And it caught us all by surprise. We're like, oh, there's a jet. And he had his gear down, looked like he was going to land, and he was close. He was on the western runway. And boy, he tucked those gear up, hit the burner, trimmed the airplane, and down the runway he went, didn't he? Yeah. And all of a sudden, there's like, they're just coming from everywhere. What would you say? There's 5 or 6 more that showed up?
Probably.
And one of the cool things, there was a pair of them that came over and they did their break for landing right over top of us, which was cool. So I got to see that and it just kind of rekindled what I'd done when I was a kid. And so we sat there for a few minutes, with the air conditioner running and the windows down because it was hot down there. We got there and sat there for a few minutes and I said, okay, we got to get on down the road. It's already taken us 7 hours to get to here. That's what happens when you go traveling with me. I'm a back road person. It takes a lot longer, but you put up with me. Thank you. But you see lots of interesting things along the way, right?
Yes.
A lot more things than you would see going down the interstate.
Oh yeah.
So got back on 261 and headed south, and 261 runs right by the entrance to Poinsett Combat Range. And what was happening as we drove by?
They were coming in and shooting their machine guns.
You can't see them from the road, but of course, as they come in and again, as they pull out, you could see them. And it was just, had the windows down and man, it just lit us up, didn't it?
It did, yes.
So I had to Google them. I pulled off the side of the road. Yes, I pulled off the side of the road before I Googled them. I found a telephone number and I called them in, and Lamon O'Neill picked up the phone, assured me they were still there and still open to the public. So if you want to go see that, you can go. Now, we didn't have time. I said, look, we're coming back through. I'll call you just to see if anything's going on. He said, that'd be fine. So, but you need to call for 2 reasons. And I'm going to let Taylor tell you why you need to call. And the first reason
is to make sure that there's something coming in.
That's right. You don't want to drive down to Sumter and get there and they say, oh, there's nothing on the schedule. Because it was like Joe said, he said, sometimes they'll sit there for a week or two and nothing happening. But at other times, they're just busy. So that's the first reason. You want to make sure there's something going on. The second reason, when you get there and turn on the range road, you want to call because
there's a red and green light. And if the red's there, you can't go in because they're coming down and shooting the targets. But if it's green, go ahead. But if it's no, just pretend it's a red.
That's right. Joe said, look, he said, there's red and green. The red means stop. The green means go. Of course, I knew all this from being down there below, but he was having fun with the kids. And he said, if you don't see any lights, you don't see the red or green, he said, assume it's red. He said, and in a live fire range, you never want to assume something's green. So we got there. I called him. He said, yeah, we got lots going on this morning. We got there. And as we, of course, we got the green light to go across because you do cross the strafing range before you get to the control tower and the buildings and all that. And as we parked and got out, Joe came out, a gentleman came up. I didn't know his name at the time. He said, y'all just come on up. Now, they do have a stadium, like a bleacher set up out there for you to watch from. Now, it was 92 degrees when we got there, and I was ready to sit out there. That's just me, but I knew the rest of them would be in the car. Taylor may be with me, but anyway, we got to go up into the tower, which is really cool because you're there. What were they doing a lot of times in the tower?
They were coming through and shooting their machine guns and everything.
Well, what were they talking about in the tower, though? You had Joe and Lamont, and they were talking to the pilots. They were talking to y'all. Mm-hmm. They were explaining to you all the things about points at weapons range. And let's go over a little bit. Poinsett is actually 12,500 acres. Now, they only use a little over 400 of that from the range. The other part is actually a Carolina Bay. And if you know anything about a Carolina Bay, in summertime, it's pretty rough in there. And they were telling us that the night before, they had helicopters and soldiers doing night exercises. And he said it was pretty funny, he said, because they had to give up. The soldiers were trying to navigate the Carolina Bay. It was so thick and nasty. And the Carolina Bay is boggy, too. It's like Pluff Mud on the coast, except you don't smell it until it sucks you in, and then you smell it. And they had to give up. He said it was a good thing, too. He said, because we got lots of alligators back in there. And I'm sure the noise of the helicopters and that sort of thing kind of, you know, pushed the alligators back where they weren't out. But it's 12,500 acres. It was in operation since 1952. That's the 63-foot climb up to the top of the tower. It services F-16s, F-15s, 18 Hornets from all around the south. Primarily, they do have airplanes that pass through and will do their exercises. They have, what do they have? They have a bombing range, and we didn't get to see them drop any bombs, but they were doing...
They were coming through, but they didn't have any bombs on the aircraft.
On the airplane. And he was telling us they practice with 25-pound bombs, but they're designed to have the same flight characteristics as a 500-pound bomb. So they just use and he said, and there's hundreds and thousands of them down there. He said, we don't pick them all up because a lot of them sink in. They have this range here, and 2 miles south, they have an additional range where they drop a lot of the heavier ordnance. And he said, you know, there's just big craters down there. We take our tractors and all and cover it up and keep moving. But it is a great little place to go for a family. The bombing is scored by computers, triangulation. Using television cameras, which are located on the four towers around the bombing range. The strafing is actually done by microphone. And there are microphones around the targets that pick up the sound of the bullets going by. And instantaneously, the guys, the air traffic controllers, that information goes to the squadrons themselves, and they can know instantaneously how they did so they can adjust on their next pass. And a lot of these guys were making multiple passes, weren't they, Taylor?
They were, yeah.
Okay, give me the scenario for when they were coming in for do a strafing run. Give me what they had to do.
They had to kind of make a couple of runs around it
right,
to get their level with the target.
And get their orientation and know what their sight picture is and that sort of thing. Now, when they made that last revolution, what did they get to do?
They got to load it.
Turn the guns on. Got to go live with the guns on that last round. And what's your opinion of what a M61 20mm cannon is going off sounds like?
It sounds like a zipper in front of a bullhorn.
It does. It really, it's a bzzz. And back when I was going down in the late 80s and early 90s, they had A-10s at Shaw Air Force Base. So they were shooting the 30mm cannons down there, and it was like a zipper on steroids. And the smoke coming off the airplanes, both from them shooting and from the afterburners they turned off was really cool.
Yes, it was.
It was very cool. And although, you know, my wife stayed inside in the air conditioning, the guys there, we spent 2 hours at least with them, sometimes in the control tower. I was more on the catwalk around the control tower. And they just, they talked. They were telling us about where they'd been stationed. You could hear the communications going on with the jet pilots and them. And they're a traffic controller, so they could take control of the airspace around there. And, but he said they used to have buses of people come through. It was on the Sumter Tourism. He said, but lately nobody comes. And there's a wealth of information there, plus all the fun you get to do. And they've got aircraft out there, and they've got the targets and all that. They've got a whole lot more. See you on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. That last segment was a lot of information. I will post those links on the Facebook page. I'll talk about those camps again next week in case, but the website is YLICAMPS.com. That's Youth Learning Institute Camps at Clemson. That was Teacher Teacher by 38 Special. And in conjunction with that, I'd like to welcome to the air Al Stokes. Al is the man in charge of the Waddell Mariculture Center down in Bluffton, South Carolina. And Al, you taught me a lot this week.
Well, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I want to tell you again how much we enjoyed being down there. You taking your time to take us through that whole facility, showing us the hiking trails, extending us the house and all. It was wonderful. I can't thank you enough for that.
Well, it was our pleasure.
Okay, so you are the man in charge at the Waddell Mariculture Facility. That's a field experiment station of the Department of Natural Resources in Bluffton, South Carolina. I saw the news release that said, fishermen, cobia season's coming. We're doing a DNA sampling program. Clip your fins or give us your skeletons. And I said, hot dog, here's something for fishermen. They raise the fish there. They dump the fish in the river. We catch them. Everything's great. But Waddell is a lot more than that.
Oh, yeah. We do so much more than that. We develop technologies for seafood production, developing species that can be farm-raised. These are all saltwater species. We've been a leader in shrimp production over the years. As you know, we import 91% of our seafood in the United States, and it's, you know, we need to develop those new technologies for developing more sustainable types and environmentally friendly types of seafood farming. The other thing that we do is develop those tools for rebuilding wild fish populations that are important to the state of South Carolina. And right now we're working on the saltwater striped bass, spotted sea trout, red drum, and cobia. And cobia right now are just becoming in season. I got reports today that they've been seeing some fish offshore. So everybody's all excited about cobia.
May is the month for cobia.
Early May, they start picking up their first fish, yes.
Okay. All right. Being as it's that time and you want these fins for DNA, tell us the whole process. And I know I've talked to you. We're going to have you back on to talk about the mariculture, which is saltwater farming that we talked about just recently. But since this is cobia, let's talk cobia. Now tell us the program at Waddell that brings us to releasing cobia into Port Royal Sound and the Broad River.
Well, a little more than 10 years ago, there was a tremendous amount of interest in developing this particular species as to be a farmed fish, one that could be grown in coastal waters for seafood. The interest, we applied for a grant with other agencies and universities, and we received the role of developing hatchery techniques for farming these fish. And it was a great species to work with, and also because Beaufort County has about 85% of the cobias that are caught in the states right in this area. So we have plenty of broodstock in the area to take, you know, our adults from. And we did develop those tools to spawn cobia. We were able to produce large numbers. We sent them to the other universities and research facilities, and then we grew some fish on our own. A byproduct to the food production research is we had fish that we had to do something with. And since the recreational fishermen were so interested in this particular fish, we started tagging these fish for release. Over the years, we decided that, you know, putting small plastic tags in fish was laborious and it was also expensive. And our geneticists with our agency and others developed techniques to track these populations using DNA. So we're now are funded to do some additional research with looking at rebuilding or building certain year classes of cobia population, releasing them into the wild, and then tracking them using DNA.
Which is amazing.
Yes, and it's a wonderful tool. Because we can look at our contribution to the wild fish population. We can also help us get an estimate on how well these populations are doing, looking at these returns. We can get age information, so we know the age structure within a population. We can determine sex. It's a wonderful tool because your DNA doesn't fall off.
That's right. And it doesn't grow barnacles and that sort of thing, or where you can't read the numbers and all that.
That's right.
When I was down there, you were telling me about changing out the parents so you have specific DNA lines for specific years.
Yes, we work with recreational fishermen. We'll have a tournament in a couple of weeks, and they will go out and catch fish. We'll have three chase boats. So if when they catch an adult fish, we will recover that fish, bring it to the Mariculture Center, and put it into maturation for spawning. We only use a set of parents 1 year, and then we can tag them using, we have the DNA samples, but we can also use small electronic tags like you would tag your dog to identify this fish, and we can release them back in the wild. And we only use those parents 1 year. If we ever recover them the second year, we will not use them. So we'll have a genetic profile that changes from year to year. So when we get DNA samples in, we can tell what year those fish were released and where they were released based on DNA.
And now those tournament fishermen, they can either keep those cobia or turn them over to you. And what you told me is the ones that turn them over to you get more points in the tournament?
Right. It's a point tournament. And if you donate the fish, you get more points. So, yeah, it's an incentive for those fishermen to give us those fish.
Now, cobia hatch, and you told me, I believe, within 24 hours, they will hatch into those little tiny little things. In 72 hours, they are ready to eat food.
Right. We take the parents will put them into large tanks, and they will condition to spawn based on ambient water temperature and light that we'll arrange to match the season. It's an indoor system. And those fish will spawn. A female on one spawn can release more than 1 million eggs. And she can spawn every 3 to 4 days from a few hundred thousand to a million or more. And she can probably spawn, they believe, in the wild for about 30 to 45 days. So they can produce a lot of eggs.
That's a lot of eggs.
We can, one hatch may give us over a million larvae.
And you take those larvae and you put them in tanks. You raise them and you release them at what size? Was it six inches?
They hatch in 24 hours. They're ready to go on live food. So we prepare ponds by putting organic fertilizers in there, stimulating phytoplankton production, get a good population of zooplankton, live food for these cobia. We introduce them to the ponds, and then we monitor those fish. And within 6 weeks, we have almost a six-inch fish. And then we can take those fish and release them back into the wild.
And you told me they will put on 15, they can put on up to 15 pounds in their first year.
That's correct. And that's why the original research was done. This fish is an excellent culture fish because it can reach 15 pounds in 1 year and go to market, where if our coastal species, red drum, for example, it may get only 1 pound in 1 year. Very fast growers.
Very fast growers and very fun to catch. I've yet to catch a cobia. A lot of people tell me they're fun. One of these days, I have a guide friend in Charleston who goes down to the Broad River every year for about a week, and he keeps telling me to come down. I never get down. I'm going to have to go down there and do that one year.
It's a blast. This is an amazing fish, and they eat everything. They'll eat sharks. They'll eat just about any fish. They love crustaceans. They'll eat horseshoe crabs. They'll eat stingrays. I mean, they're an aggressive predator. And, in fact, some fishermen actually look for large sharks on the surface and will fish behind those.
Cobia trail them looking for scraps.
Cobia will trail them looking for scraps.
Okay, if an angler is coming down to cobia fish, what does he need to do as far as the research project for you goes?
If they catch a fish, they can call us at the Mariculture Center, and they can drop the carcass off. We picked up between 300 and 500 carcasses a year. To get information on age and get DNA samples, look at stomach contents and egg production. So fishermen in our community here are well aware of our program where we put out coolers and small freezers at some of the docks. And if they catch a fish, they'll tag it and put it in the cooler for us. But if someone's just visiting here, they can call us and we'll meet them, or they can come to the Mariculture Center. I'll give them a tour if they'll bring me a carcass.
Oh, there you go. And let me tell you, folks, a tour is great. Now, you don't have regularly scheduled tours. They're given as you have time available.
Right.
So they need to call first, and you are the man to call. We're running up close to a break here. I want to thank you for coming on. I will be back in touch with you because we have a lot more to cover on Waddell and what all it does. Food production, farming, seafood. You also have the spotted sea trout, the redfish, and the saltwater stripers you stock.
That's right.
What's the number down there if they want to call? And they're going to be in Hilton Head this summer. What's the number?
843-837-3795.
Al, I really appreciate you calling in. I especially appreciate the welcome you gave my daughter and I will talk to you soon. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. On the line with us today is Bradley Miller with the Department of Natural Resources. Bradley, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. Look, I appreciate you coming on with us today. Are you still out on the water?
I am not. I am stuck in traffic on Woodruff Road.
Oh, no. Well, Bradley's with the Department of Natural Resources, and the reason he's on the show with us today is because summer is here. And Bradley, if you were out on Lake Hartwell this morning, I'm sure you saw your fill of boats, PWCs, and stand-up paddleboards.
That's it. We saw plenty. We were actually out working a swimming event, so we didn't get to do a lot of focusing on boats. We did towards the end. Everybody seemed to be having a good time, enjoying the sun.
Did you lose any of the swimmers?
We did not. Thankfully, we did not. There was many volunteers out there watching. There was probably about 500 people out there swimming everything from 5K to half K. So, it was a range of probably 6-year-olds to 60-year-old swimming. So there was a lot of people out there watching, and glad everybody's safe.
And a good day to go swimming.
Very good. Very hot outside.
Yes, it's very hot. I'm sorry you're stuck in traffic, but at least you're here on the air with us.
I no problem at all.
What is, we're in the boating season now, and I want you to give us some help with boating safety. What's the number one problem in boating safety from your standpoint?
From my standpoint, life jackets. Life jackets are one of the biggest things we look for. There are other things as such as sound device and navigational lights and type 4 throwables and fire extinguishers. But when it comes down to it, there's many a times where we ride by and just say, hold up a life jacket. Life jacket is going to be what saves your life. So we are definitely on the look for that and making sure everybody's safe and enjoying the water.
What's the, correct me if I'm wrong, the age requirement on life jackets ends when the boat gets over 16 feet, correct?
That is correct. A boat over 16 feet, you are not required to wear a life jacket at any age. under 16 feet and under, you a child 12 and under must be in a life jacket.
But, you know, that's a cheap piece of insurance for a kid, is just having to wear one all the time the boat's under power.
It, you know, it's not worth losing a child over. And the big thing is we see a lot of problems is making sure that life jacket fits the child. You stick a 4 or 5 year old child in an adult life jacket, and they're trying to do right, and they think it's safe, but if something happened, that child went in the water, the life jacket's going to come straight over their head, and they're going to go to the bottom. So, you know, make sure to have a youth life jacket, an infant life jacket, something that is, you know, going to fit them size-wise as far as weight.
Right. So you look for, one of the biggest things you look for is life jackets out there. What are some of the things you're going to look for negligent boating wise and that sort of thing?
Well, Greenville's, I work Greenville County, and it's a little bit different as far as what we look for just because there's not a lot of big water.
Right.
We were out on Hartwell today, and, you know, there's many things we look for. We want everybody to be safe, but, you know, something I look out for, and it's a big thing to me, is people behind people pulling tubers and skiers, you know, just getting close to other boats and slinging them out wide towards docks, and making sure the boats behind those boats are on a lookout.
Yeah.
I get nervous always riding behind one just because you never know when that person's going to fall off, and then you've got to do something to change your path to make sure there's not a disaster.
It's almost like following another car on the road. You got to make sure you got enough room between you and the next boat ahead of you, or the guy on the tube or the water skis, where you can get around him before you run over him.
Oh, 100%. And you know, they can come off quick, and you might not see them come off, but once they're in the water, unless they're throwing their hands up 99% of the time, if you didn't see them come off, you're not going to see them in the water. So you got to be careful. You got to be observant. Same as driving a car.
Yep.
Keep your eyes forward. Pay attention what's around you. You know, there's no lines you got to drive in the lake, but, you know what's coming at you, know what's going away from you, and just be aware of your surroundings.
Common courtesy would solve a lot of problems, wouldn't it?
Oh, 100%.
Well, look, if you had to give one piece of advice to a new boater, guy just bought his boat, somebody just got a new PWC, what's the best advice you could give them?
Take a boating class. And I know it seems somewhat childish. You know, people think, well, I can go out and drive a boat. It's not hard. There's not many rules. Well, there are a lot of rules. When it comes down to it, there's a lot of laws you have to follow. And people don't know it. We come across it every day, whereas someone will say, well, I didn't realize I had to have that, and I read the book. Well, go take a simple boater's class, and you can find those on our DNR website. Take something, learn a little bit about it, and when you're ready to put in on the water, you've learned your laws and know what you need to do, but when you're ready to put in, not on a weekend, put in on a weekday, and then go enjoy it.
At
a slow time. Without all the crowds. You get out on a Saturday and everybody's off and wanting to enjoy it, but you also have some boats out there that can run 60, 80 miles an hour and they gonna make you feel a little uncomfortable. Go to a smaller lake where you can, where you know where you're going. You're not gonna get lost and not worry about it, or you can just kind of putt around and get the feel of the boat.
That was good, because that was one of the things I had down here. Does South Carolina require a boating safety course? Now, we don't require it like we require a hunter safety course, but it's a good idea to take one.
It's never going to hurt. And we don't deal with it, or in Greenville we don't, as far as a child, you know, under the age of 16, even 12, you know, if they're out there alone, some of them are required to have it, and that's just, but majority of the time a parent's going to be with a young child out on a boat. But I advise everybody, it's worth taking a class. You will learn something, even if it's just a law that's going to keep you out of trouble out on the water.
One of those things you didn't think you needed to know.
Oh, 100%, because there's a lot of them.
It is. Trust me. I got a little boat that I run around in Charleston in, and it's amazing the things you have to keep up with and know just to go fishing for a little bit.
Just a little bit can cost you.
It sure can.
The main thing we want is enjoy your time. We are, you know, a lot of people think we're the bad guys, and do we have to do those things? Sometimes, yes, we do. But our main goal is to keep everybody safe, to enjoy the water, because we enjoy it ourselves.
Yeah, I enjoy it a lot. Well, Bradley, I appreciate you coming on and giving us some information right from the source.
Yes.
Have a good day. Hope you get out of that traffic soon.
I got you. Have a good one, partner.
All right. Thank you, sir. You know, it is something to think about. You know, you get excited about getting a boat. And I remember when I got mine, I was just ready to get to the water. And I ran down to Apple Landing and put in. I'd never had my own boat before. And I just off across the lake I went. And, in retrospect, it was really not the wisest thing to do. But I just had to get in the water. But I did. I came back, took my boating safety course. And it is a lot to keep up with, you know. And a lot of it's just out there to protect you from everybody else. Running lights is a big one. I love to go nighttime fishing down in Charleston. And without those running lights, that anchor light, you know, it's one of the things that's got to be there. He mentioned you could go to the DNR webpage. They have links there for boating safety courses. The Coast Guard gives them, DNR gives them, Towboat US or CETO, they have links that will get you to a boating safety course. You can do them online or in a classroom. But the DNR has just a simple little page that I print out here. It says boating safety. It says, before you leave, download the DNR float plan, fill it out, and make sure you leave the plans with a responsible individual. You know, that's not something you normally think about, but if your boat breaks down and they don't know exactly which lake you were on or what part of the lake you were on, and then it takes you longer to find them. Check the weather. Boy, weather in the summertime, it changes by the hour. Make sure you know the long-term weather forecast. And of course, today with weather apps and smartphones, there's no sense not to know what the weather's doing. Let somebody know where you're going. Gather all the life-saving devices. Make sure they're in good serviceable condition and are the correct size, especially children. And let me tell you what, they will ticket you for a torn life jacket. So something to keep in mind when you're doing this. Check fuel and the battery charges. Make sure all the lights are in good working condition on the boat and the trailer. And the trailer, there's a whole nother ball of wax, is making sure your trailer's in good, you know, the hubs, the bearings, the lights, that sort of things. Make sure your fire extinguisher, if you have to have it on the boat, is accessible and good serviceable condition. One of my favorite one, put the plug in. There is nothing worse than backing a boat down in the water, parking the trailer, and you come back and you're like, now why is the boat canted over like that? And why is it resting on the concrete? And why is the motor foot digging in the concrete? Because you didn't put the plug in. Now, smaller boats, a Walmart bag will work. I have plugged a boat with a Walmart bag. I don't recommend it, but that's just one of those things. Connect the safety trailer chains on the tow vehicle. Carry a cell phone. Like I said, it's no excuse not to have one. On the water, know the aids to navigation, the buoy system. Careful about operating a boat under the influence of alcohol or drugs. You know, be aware that sailboats always have the right of way unless they're under power. That's a big one. Someone falls over, throw something to them. Don't jump in after them. Boat capsizes, stay with the boat. Caught in a storm, head into the wind, put on PFDs, keep everybody low in the boat. Something to keep you safe. Love to enjoy the water, but you won't be safe doing it. Well, I hope you enjoyed the Best Of show today. Tune in again next Saturday because I'll be back live in the studio. The number for Poinsett Weapons Range, in case you think you might want to go down there, you can call them at 803-895-2597. There is nothing like the sound of a jet and live machine gun fire. Chuck Norris for today. This is a good one. When Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, he had 3 missed calls from Chuck Norris. I hear James in the background. That means that's all for another Saturday on Woods and Water, South Carolina. I hope you had a safe rest of the holiday weekend. Find some time after the big cookouts to get outside. Travel the back roads when you can. Remember to show off some red, white, and blue while you're out there. And don't forget the camera.